So we are very happy to have Sivan Karotsa here, since he's a very fresh father. He might look a bit tired, so please excuse him for that. Sivan did some pioneering work on renormalization of group field theories in his PhD at the Albert Einstein Institute and Orsay. And he's now a postdoc at PI, but will move soon to Radboud University. And Sivan will tell us about tensor field theories, Mellonic series, and quantum gravity. Welcome, Sivan.
Okay. Well, thank you. So I would like, first to thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to speak today. And I apologize for not being very active in the rest of the conference, but hopefully I can catch up on Slack. And I would like to give you a kind of broad review of tensor models today. And in the spirit of this conference, I will talk about maybe roughly what, in broad terms, of what has been done in the last 10 years in this direction. So my talk will be mainly about large N theories, large N structures. And so, as you know, large N theories are interesting because they provide a platform to investigate certain aspects of quantum gravity in a tractable or even sometimes analytically solvable context. And one general class of theories in recent years that have been explored are so-called Mellonic theories, which go under these names because they are dominated in Feynman expansion by so-called Mellon diagrams. And so this, since this will play a role in the rest of the talk, I will define for you already what a Mellon diagram is. So it's just a diagram that can be generated by this simple recursive move here on the left, where one replaces a propagator by a self-energy correction like this. And when applied on a graph on the right, for example, one can construct complicated looking graphs from this simple basic move. Okay, and these Mellonic theories, examples of such theories are the celebrated Sedef-Yekutiev model. But also I would argue that they're in fact a very robust host for this type of theories is given by tensor models. And also just in passing, there have been also these Mellonic theories have appeared in other fields of theoretical physics, for example, in the study of glassy physics, but I won't talk about that today. So here will be the outline of my talk. So, I will first set up notations in the introduction, and then I will move to, I will have basically two parts, which are can be seen as independent, even if they talk to each other in a way. So the first part will be about work that has started in the last, around 2010 on applications of random tensors to random geometry. I will summarize the stages there, and then I will move on to this more recent aspects of tensor models with applications to Mellonic quantum theories. And then I will take questions. So let's start very simple. So what are tensor models? They are theories in which the degrees of freedom are organized into a p-indexed tensors of size n. The indices are ranges from 1 to n. And I will adopt this kind of tensor network notations where a tensor is a vertex with half edges representing indices of the tensors and contracting two indices are represented by gluing two half edges. And this representation is nice because it gives you already like a nice set of invariants of the tensors. So let's assume for definiteness that these tensors are real and symmetric. So for a vector, a one index tensor, there is just one basic connected invariant, which is the scalar product here, which is represented by this simple diagram. Now in matrix theories, two index tensors, there's exactly one basic connected invariant per order in the matrices, and they are simply the trace of M to the N. Okay, the usual traces of matrices. Now something, the key thing I want to remark at this point is that from P onwards, for P equals to 3 onwards, there are many more invariants. The number of invariants grows very quickly with the order, like this quantity here. And because they are indexed by graphs, you know, like for example, for p equals 3, they will be like 3 regular graphs. And so the key thing I want to say on this slide is that tensor models have really a very large theory space. And so finding universal features in this theory space necessarily relies on cornering certain set of invariants. Okay. Now, of course, a gold standard of a nice topology, large N expansion is that of matrix models, where for basically any action which can be expressed in terms of, let's say, a single trace type of theory, the Feynman expansion is indexed by ribbon diagrams, as you know, or dual tessellations, which in fact canonically encode two dimensional manifolds, let's say orientable in this example I want to focus on. And then there is this very well known large N expansion where the dominant contribution at large N scale like N squared and are given by planar contributions. And then any subsequent non-trivial topology is suppressed by a factor of 1 of n squared per whole per genus. Okay. And as you know, so this large N limit has been used in two different directions in quantum gravity. One, where this interpretation of the Feynman diagrams as 2D manifolds is very key and central, and that is the application in the context of random surfaces or quantum gravity in two dimensions, where here the matrix integral is just a device to generate a statistical ensemble of space-time histories or Euclidean space-time histories. And then there is a second set of applications to essentially strongly coupled QFT, where here the topological interpretation is maybe a bit more contingent. What matters is really that there is a new perturbation theory in this new parameter 1 over n, which allows to sometimes to treat the coupling constant effects non-perturbatively. And this, of course, is one of the main key probes of holographic dualities. And many in this audience know much more than I do, so I won't explain. I won't spend too much time on this. But what I would like to do now in the rest of the talk is tell you a bit about what tensor models have been used for in this kind of two lines of thoughts in the last 10 years. So research started in this field, started on this, in these aspects, random geometry, and then moved on to strongly coupled quantum theories. Okay, so let's start with random geometry. So let's come back again to the matrix integral situation. So let's say when one of the simplest models that then of a random surface of random surfaces one can take is where one take a matrix integral for emission matrix with all the P interactions, trace MP here. So what, as I said, what the large N limit provides here is a weighted sum of is a partition function in the large N limit of a planar P angulation, P for the trace MP interaction that I have chosen. And so it generates a sum of a discrete geometries. And one can then reach a continuum limit because this partition function here has a critical point, and one can tune to criticality to describe, in fact, a random but continuum object. And this object is in mathematics has been studied a lot in recent years, is known as the Brownian sphere. And it's really the basic universal object which is behind, in hindsight, 2D quantum gravity, Liouville quantum gravity, as was studied in physics since the 80s. Okay. So here's an illustration just for visualization what this object is. So what I want to point out on this slide is that key universal features of these objects can be seen already at a purely combinatorial level in this manner. Like, in fact, for any type of planar object rooted, that's a technical assumption, counting the number of these objects in terms of the number of their building blocks here, n delta, one finds a asymptotic enumeration, asymptotic scaling of this form. And here there's one key universal exponent, which is this minus 5/2 here, which is universal for any type of planar objects. Like one can take any type of P angulation, this minus 5/2 will be here. So I pointed out because we will contrast that with the exponents we find in tensor models. And so this object is really an honest modelization of a random 2D surface because it has spectral dimension 2, so it's locally like a 2D surface. But you see in this visualization is very spiky, so in fact it has Hausdorff dimension 4. Okay, but that won't matter too much for us today. So, all right, so now, so one objective of tensor models would be to find out for the purpose of quantum gravity whether one can discover such basic random geometric objects but in higher dimensions that could then be useful in the context of quantum gravity. And so this is a very old idea. It has been explored since the early 90s already. And at the time there was a number of challenges. First, working with tensors, one loses many of the matrix techniques that are very useful, like a spectral representation, for example. And also, in fact, the interplay between the combinatorics and the topology of the spaces that one generates in this Feynman expansion is in fact more subtle. So for this reason, there was no known generalization of the large N expansion of mixed matrix models for a while. And progress happened only in the around the early 2010s when with work of Guro in particular, we introduced like tensor models with more symmetries. So here, I should have said that in the 90s, people focused on the natural setup of completely symmetric tensors with this type of interactions, which represent the generalization of the matrix construction. So it represents a building blocks of 3D geometry, namely tetrahedron, that can then be used to construct triangulation. And in fact, progress was made by looking at a different set of tensor models with more symmetries. So, and because they have more symmetries, they have more tractable combinatorics, which maps to sufficiently regular topological spaces in the Feynman expansion. And thanks to these key insights, these people could unlock the could discover a large N expansion suitable for this type of tensor integrals. Okay. Okay, so just to give you an idea of what these models are, so I said that they are models with more symmetries. So what I mean by that is that now instead of having a symmetric tensor, I have a tensor where each one of the indices of the tensor has its own symmetry, namely UN. So it's a complex model, and so in the kind of tensor network representation, the difference now is that I have colored diagrams to indicate what position to indicate graphically what index position I'm representing, and I have two types of tensors: the black T tensors and the white conjugate T bar tensors. And similarly, one can construct basic invariants by graphically, like for d equals 2, one gets again like a trace invariance. For d equals 3, one gets more interactions, slightly different from what I was representing before in the case of symmetric tensors. But the main point is still that the number of invariants grows very quickly with the number of tensors. Okay. And so in this setup, there is an analog of this kind of single trace matrix theory, which is a partition function where one take an action, which is an arbitrary sum of this contractions of this invariant contractions represented by these colored diagrams, which are called sometimes as bubble trace diagrams. So they are called traces in analogy with the matrix context. Okay, and so now coming back to the topology, why these new sets of invariants and these colors? So the motivation in this context for this type of symmetries is that in fact these color diagrams they map canonically to a nice topological spaces or sufficiently nice topological spaces, and this is due to due to a theorem of Pezzana in the 70s, which showed that any d-colored graphs in fact can be from a d-colored graph, so a graph with d colors properly colored, one can construct a triangulation delta of a what's called a pseudo-manifold of dimension d minus one. So here pseudo-manifold is a slightly larger class of topological spaces than manifolds, but we won't care too much about that point here. Let's say that it's a reasonably nice set of topological spaces, which contains all manifolds. That's what matters. And so I don't have time to explain you a bit, to tell you a lot about this correspondence, but the key thing, the key idea behind this is that what happens from d equals 3 onwards, so let's focus on d equals 4. So here, when constructing a dual triangulation, you need to think of a tensor as a dual to a simplex in the appropriate dimension. So here a tetrahedron, and then a contraction of two half edges of two tensors as a gluing of two faces here in green, for example. And so what's missing if you don't have this colored structure is that you know that you need to glue this triangle to that one, but you don't know how to glue the sub simplices together, namely the edges, for example, or the vertices. And so what this colored structure gives you is precisely the necessary information to reconstruct all these gluings of sub-simplices. And that explains also why this colored structure is not necessary in the case of matrix models, because you don't have these sub-simplices to start with. Okay. And so in this setup now, the partition function I was representing before, like which is a sum of trace invariants of, represented by these diagrams, now they provide, just like in the matrix context, simple chunks of geometry, pieces of d-dimensional geometry. So for example, here I have represented what this diagram would look like in its dual representation. It would be a kind of double pyramid like this. And then when developing in Feynman expansion, one glues these vertices together by extra lines, propagator lines, which are usually represented with dashes to distinguish them from the colored lines, which are really internal to the vertices of the theory. And in that way, when construct the interactions are represented by d colored graphs, and the Feynman graphs are represented by d plus one colored graphs. And as a result, the Feynman graphs, by this same theorem here, represent pseudo manifolds of dimension d. Okay. All right. Let me move on. And so the large N expansion that was discovered in this context is an honest by Guro, is indexed by a quantity which is called the Guro degree, which is a non-negative number, just like the genus. In fact, it is a generalization of the genus because in two dimensions, one finds that this degree omega is just twice the genus. But the key difference is that it's not a topological invariant in D slightly bigger than three, in D bigger than three. However, what remains compared to the case of matrix models is that the leading order contributions in this expansion have a degree zero, and they are in fact spheres. They are just not all triangulations of the sphere. They are just specific triangulations of the sphere. And let me give you an idea of what they are. In fact, they are so-called Mellonic triangulations of the sphere. It's a very special subset of this set of triangulations of the sphere, which can be enumerated exactly by, for example, this generating function equation for what g lambda is the quantity that counts this degree zero triangulations. And by studying this Mellonic equation here, so it's very similar to what you would find in the SYK context, except that it's in zero dimension here, this equation, so it's algebraic. One can recover the critical behavior and study the continuum limit. And to compare with what I was discussing in the case of the Brownian sphere, one finds a critical exponent in the enumeration of these Mellonic diagrams of a minus 3/2 compared to the 5/2 of planar objects. So this in fact is the critical exponent of associated to combinatorial trees. And in fact, it has been proven that this Lagrangian expansion, this Mellonic Lagrangian expansion, converges in the continuum limit, gives in the continuum limit a random geometry, which is known in physics as the branched polymer phase, and in mathematics as the continuum random tree. So that's what I already said, that the key difference with the matrix case is this exponent here, minus 3/2 versus 5/2. And as a result, in fact, this object doesn't have dimension d, as we were trained to obtain. It has a local structure, which is more like a dimension 4/3 and Hausdorff dimension 2. But you see that there is a very strong universality at play behind the scene, because one was trying to construct an object, a random geometric object of dimension d, and in the end, one gets in the limit something that doesn't depend at all on d, in fact, and it is just of local dimension 4/3. Okay, so this type of limit has been studied in a lot of details for a few years, even though it's a tree-like limit. And I should say, because I worked a lot on this, that it has the simplicity of this limit has allowed also it to find applications in other contexts, slightly different contexts. For example, in the context of group field theory, where this Mellonic structure allows to, in fact, prove rigorous renormalization theorems in this context. But yeah, I don't have time to talk about this, unfortunately, today. So, but I mentioned it because it's also an honest approach to quantum gravity. Okay, so let me move on. So that was the kind of first type of Lagrangian limit that was discovered in this new context of tensor models. But of course, for quantum gravity in higher dimensions, one would like to go beyond this branch polymer phase. And so let me just summarize quickly what we know about this question. So in fact, there is a strong universality at play, and much stronger than one could have imagined at first. In fact, there is a universality theorem proven by Bonzon for a number of Lagrangian expansions for tensor models, which are more general than the one I have introduced for you here, which are not Mellonic, but still converge to the branch polymer phase, at least in d=3. Now, reason for optimism is that, in fact, all known continuous random geometries that have been discovered previously can be reproduced in the context of tensor models. Like, so for example, Brownian sphere behavior can be reproduced, branch polymers as well, and mixtures. So that's a reason for optimism. And also, a second thing I wanted to mention is that simple combinatorial restrictions we have realized in recent years can allow to can sometimes tame down the branch polymer the proliferation of trees which is behind these branch polymer phases and reach other critical regimes. And this is something that maybe explored in future further. And so yeah, the conclusion of this is that at this stage, finding new random geometric phases suitable for quantum gravity in dimension bigger than 3 is still a major open question in this field. and not only in physics, but also in mathematics, I think, like people in probability and combinatorics are really looking for such generalizations. And yeah, that's all I wanted to say about this. So just to summarize this part of the talk, I would like to say that, yeah, tensor models for random geometry, what we know about them is that they are, provide a well-defined generalization of the matrix models approach. They reproduce all known universality classes of continuous random geometries, so that's positive, but the limitation is that we haven't found a genuinely new phase so far in this framework. But I should say that, as I said in the beginning, the parameter space is really large, okay? So maybe it's only a start, okay. Okay, now let me move on to the, unless there are urgent questions, because anyway, I'm not doing great with time.
Maybe one question, which is from Dengjia, which is there a correspondence between the tensor matrix actions and familiar Euclidean Einstein-Hilbert actions with possibly higher order terms?
So I guess it's something that I didn't mention, but yes. So the tensor models, when you write down what the sum of a Feynman diagrams, how the sum of a Feynman graphs is weighted, you can interpret this sum as a kind of dynamical triangulation sum weighted by the Einstein-Hilbert term. Because you get a term from d simplices and a term from d minus two simplices that give you access to the curvature. So, but despite that, in fact, there is this kind of much stronger universality at play behind that completely squashes and completely flattens, I think, this kind of details. So I would say that at first it looks like it's a nice discretization that will give a proper path interval for Einstein-Hilbert, but in fact, there are stronger forces at play behind the scene, I would say. That's me.
Okay, and I suggest in the interest of time that you go on and you have roughly 14 minutes.
Okay. All right, so maybe I go a bit quicker on the last part. So, So now something interesting that happened is that this kind of very simple Mellonic large N limits that we would like to go beyond in the context of random geometry can in fact been used in the context of quantum mechanics or quantum field theory with connections to quantum gravity to study strongly coupled effects. And here, the fact that this limit is simple is really what makes it useful and interesting. Okay. So now, of course, all of this has been motivated by the Sajdev-Yekitaev model. So I don't know, I guess people talked about this already during the conference. So I won't explain very much about this, but I would just like to say that this is, as you know, a model of disordered systems of Majorana quantum mechanics. So where everyone interacts with everyone else. So it's all to all interaction terms like this here, and it's random. So the interaction is mean zero, and it has a variance which is tuned appropriately with n, so that there is a nice large limit. And so the many interesting properties that this model has are, for example, that it's solvable at large n, and more than that, that it has an emergent conformal symmetry at strong coupling. So when lambda goes large or in the infrared. And what makes it interesting for quantum gravity is that this breaking of this conformal symmetry is exactly the same as what happens in Jacobi-Teitelbaum quantum gravity, and as a result, it captures the same effective action. So there are nice terminals of, in a way, quantum black holes. All right, and so what happened in 2016 in related to tensor models is the fact that Witten remarked that the same Mellonic large N limit, it's the same Mellonic large N limit as in tensor models, roughly at leading order, that allows for all these type of properties. So as a result, it could propose like a model of that has all these nice properties minus the fact that it's a disordered system. So it could propose a truly quantum mechanical model reproducing these properties. Okay, And so this has led to the realization, in fact, that this Mellonic limit is really useful as a third universal class of large N theories to be used in the context of quantum mechanics and quantum field theory. Okay, so to explain you that, let me back up a little and remind ourselves like what vector models and matrix models look like for that purpose. So vector models, the large N limit of vector models is quite simple, is dominated by so-called bubble diagrams or cacti sometimes. And it's nice because these diagrams are easy to sum. They are easy to resum. They are like geometric series basically. But it's not so nice because you see that these diagrams are in the context of quantum mechanics or quantum field theory, they bring up completely local corrections. Okay, so here there's this special vertex here. So we can only lead to renormalization flows, renormalization of the mass, for example. It doesn't lead to wave function renormalization. So it leads to simple flows, let's say. On the other hand, matrix models are completely, are much more general. They lead to very interesting flows in principle, but what's problem, maybe not so nice, is that summing planar diagrams in general in quantum mechanics or quantum field theory is not known. It's hard. And so the promise of having access to strongly coupled effects analytically, in fact, is not very often completely granted. Okay. So what's nice is that tensor models are somehow in the middle, these Mellonic theories. And I should say that what we have seen so far here, this Mellonic limit I've discussed with you so far in the context of random geometry, is not quite what we would need in this context. Because remember that this colored structure here are really the vertices of this theory. So a Mellonic contribution in what, as I described so far, would look something like this as a Feynman diagram. So it's more of a type of correction that one finds in vector models than what one finds in matrix models. But the key point is that there are slight modifications of this kind of tensor models that really provide a Mellonic structure at the level of the Feynman diagrams themselves. And in fact, they are the type of tensor models that were considered in the 90s initially, and that we now understand how to, and for which we now understand how to construct a nice large N expansion. And so, yeah, okay. And so, and the key feature of these Mellonic theories in this context is that they are bilocal. You see that there are two preferred vertices here, so they will lead to non-trivial flows, not only of the mass, but they are still summable like the bubble diagrams are. In many instances. And so in many instances, they will lead to closed and often solvable systems of Schwinger-Dyson equations, which capture bilocal effects. So it's a new addition to in this kind of zoo of large N limits. Okay. All right, I will accelerate a bit. Now I should say that I don't have time to tell you about this, but there's a kind of a zoo of this type of Mellonic large N limit that you can construct in this context. I just flashed this slide just to tell you that there are more constructions than the one I just focused on now. And the one general results we have so far, which is the most robust for the purpose of quantum mechanics and quantum field theory, is in the context of three index tensors, and it states that the Mellonic large N limit of the bilocal type, the interesting one, exists whenever the tensor representation one is working with is irreducible. And this is a theorem that applies to the type of theories, as I said, that were considered in the 90s. And what was missing, I guess, at the time was this irreducibility condition that is necessary. It's a bit technical, but it's necessary to remove vector modes in the theory, because from a tensor you can construct like vector representations if the representation is not irreducible. And these vector modes, they can spoil the nice large N structure that would lead to a Mellonic limits. And instead you would fall back again into a vector type of limit. So in order to preserve this bilocal structure, let's say, it's really important to work with a to remove trace modes or to work with irreducible representations. So, okay. And this framework is quite general. It can be applied to different symmetry groups, to different index permutation symmetries. So I just wanted to advertise that. And now I give you just one illustration, basic illustration of this setup. So it's the so-called, maybe the simplest tensor quantum mechanical model that leads to SYK-like behavior is due to Klebanov and Tarnopolsky. So it's just the same type of model as the SYK model, except that it's unitary, and there is and the interactions are constructed from n cubed Majorana fermions, which form tensors. Okay, and the interaction is of this type, represented here. The details don't matter. And so, just to illustrate now how we are led back to the SYK-like behavior. Oh, sorry. Apparently, my time is off. Should I take 5 minutes or?
Yeah, you have 5 minutes.
Okay. So what's interesting with this type of models is that at large end these theories are melonic, and so one can, for example, write down exact large end Schwingenhausen equations for let's say the 2-point function of this Majorana fermion here, and as usual the full 2-point function G minus one is the free part minus one plus the self energy correction. And what's nice here is that the self energy connection at large n is, we know it's melonic, so we get a closed equation, so it can be re-expressed by in terms of the full 2-point function itself, and so one gets for free a closed equation, which is usually not the case, right? And this equation, if I write it down fully, it's really like the same equation for the 2-point function as in the SYK model. And again, the key point is that there is no disorder here. Okay. Okay, and I don't really have time to summarize this here, but why are these type of equations interesting? Just very quickly, just because at strong coupling, one can show that this free part here can be neglected. And one get a simple equation like this, which has a conformal symmetry. In fact, it has a continuous parametrization invariant emerging in the strong coupling limit. And I should move ahead, but the key point is that the way this symmetry is broken, both explicitly and spontaneously, is exactly in the same manner as in Jacques-Yves Teitelbaum quantum gravity. And so it leads to the well-known Schwarzian effective action. And so this type of models, is just to illustrate that this type of models can be at the basis of this near AGS2, near CFT1 correspondence that has been studied a lot in recent years. Okay. But now one might ask, okay, why is it so interesting? It just reproduces like a SYK-like physics. So I would say that maybe what's interesting is that for any type of disordered SYK-like system that you want to study, in fact, it seems that quite generally you can construct an equivalent, as far as large n is concerned, a unitary theory based on tensor quantum mechanics. And of course, the catch, I would say, is that the main specificity of tensor models in this context is that the number of states, the number of invariants, remember, grow very rapidly with the, for example, with the size of the tensors. And so these models, unlike SYK, they are very hard to study numerically, to simulate numerically, because one quickly goes from having no statistics whatsoever to having way too many states to simulate on a computer. So I think that's one of the challenges, I would say. So it's unitary, but at the same time, it's harder to study at finite n, I would say. So the large n limit is the same, but at finite n is hard to study. Okay, but one thing I find really interesting, and I will close on this, is that tensor quantum mechanics brings to the table is that it can be generalized straightforwardly to higher dimensions, where it leads to the construction of melonic quantum field theories, which wouldn't be so obvious how to do starting from a disordered system like the SYK model. And why it is interesting, I'll repeat that, is because the only diagrams that proliferate at large end in this type of melonic series are melons and ladder diagrams, in fact. And so both families can be explicitly resummed non-perturbatively in some cases. And as I said, melons are bilocal, so this leads to non-trivial anomalous dimensions and non-trivial flows to CFTs, in fact. And lastly, since the four-point function can be constructed by as a sums of ladder diagrams, in fact, one also gets non-perturbative access to the spectrum of this theory in these limits. So it's really, it gives a new theoretical window into aspects of strongly coupled QFT and possibly holography, but that's more, that's remain to be seen. Okay, and then I think my time is up, so I just, I would just say that the kind of more straightforward generalization of the SYK model don't seem to lead to CFTs in the infrared. That's what I will say about this slide. But recently it was realized that in fact slightly more involved models that one can call long range models, where the kinetic term of the theory is a non-integer power of the Laplacian, for example, here, like d over 4. So these theories, in fact, flow to unitary CFTs in the infrared. And these theories can be studied, as I said, explicitly. One can compute the spectrum, the OP coefficients, and so I will end on this. So maybe that could be relevant for holography, maybe not, but at least it's interesting for from the point of view of strongly coupled QFT. All right, so just to summarize this part of the talk, the main take-home message is that tensor models for strongly coupled quantum theory and possibly quantum gravity is nice because it gives a third generic family of large end theories, the melonic one. It can reproduce SYK-like physics without disorder, and it generalizes straightforwardly to QFT, where it seems to lead to a new family of CFTs. Okay, that has only started to be investigated. And I guess I will stop here. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Sylvain. We start with a question from the channel, Aaron, if you can post the last section you posted.
Who?
Aaron. You should be.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for unmuting. So the last question that was posted to the anonymous channel was, are the path integrals UV finite? If yes, what provides the regularization? The length of the simplices as a minimal length scale?
The path integrals, in which section? I guess in the random geometry section of the talk, or?
I think it was at the beginning of the second section of the talk.
Yeah, so in general, they are not UV finite. Like in QFT, for example, there's no reason for them to be UV finite, and there's a non-trivial randomization at play, just like in any QFT. The only difference is that this randomization flows, these melonic ones, can be studied explicitly in the strongly coupled regime. Like for example, one can compute beta functions which are just quadratic in the coupling constant, and study them explicitly. So that's But otherwise, there is no insight about the UV structure of QFTs. It's just the usual QFT context.
Okay. The next question will be by Deepak.
Hi, Sylvain. Nice talk. So I have two questions. the first thing is that, and one of the slides you said that summing planar diagrams is difficult. That is when you were talking about D is equal to 2, and then D is equal to 1 and 2, and then in the middle D is equal to 3. So my question was that, isn't like the whole point of the large end limit that one can sum planar diagrams when the bond dimension for the N becomes larger than 3?
So I think, okay, I'm not sure. Yeah, let me give an answer and tell me if it's, it answers your question. So it's, so what I would say about the planar diagrams is that we know how to resum them very nicely in zero dimensions. So we know how to count them basically. So we know how to resum them in this context. Many people probably know how to resum them in the context of theories where there is a lot of integrability at play. I don't, but I mean, it's of course a big topic, like in supersymmetric theories, or I don't know. But there is no generic way of resumming planar diagrams in a quantum theory or quantum field theory.
I mean, isn't the large in sum of planar diagrams is given by the Hooked correspondence?
The what?
The large end limit, right?
Yeah.
So the
large end limit of Tuft tells you that at leading order you can just focus on the sum of planar diagrams.
Right.
So you can
and
write.
And then when you look at the sum.
That the theory is the sum of planar diagrams, but in general,
right.
You don't know how to resum it. In fact, that's that's also true of Mellonic theories. When you don't always know explicitly how to compute everything, but in many, you know, many more. I mean, you have many more technical options to resum them. Like for example, in this Klebanov-Tarnopolsky model I was showing, in the strongly coupled limits, you can resum them quite explicitly.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Sivan, again, for this nice talk.